Working Cows Podcast, episode 210. Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network, here with another episode for you. Very excited to be joined by a longtime friend of the Working Cows Podcast, Aaron Berger. Aaron's been an extension agent with Nebraska, University of Nebraska Extension, and the host of the Beef Watch Podcast for a long time, and was one of my instructors at the High Plains Ranch Practicum. And throughout all of that, he has also been involved in various capacities on his own family operation. And an email I received from a listener was asking how to balance being a employed in town, but also having a ranch as a side hustle. And so I sent Aaron that question, and we went over it, and we're going to talk about what it looks like to be good at ranching as a side hustle. So, Aaron, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast. Welcome back.
Clay, I appreciate the opportunity to have a conversation again.
So, recently received an email from a range management specialist for the NRCS, and he says, outside of my job, I run a small stocker operation on leased land that I continue to grow as I am able to gain more leased pasture and capital to stock it. I especially enjoy several, but he says he wants to know about the part-time rancher who knows their operation is part-time operation, but needs to treat it as a hobby farm as much as possible. I worked hard to keep my ranch operation finances and economics separate from personal activities. I strive to treat my small operation as the same as any well-ran, larger, self-functioning ranch that pays its own way and is profitable. So I guess the question is, you know, how do you balance those things? What are some of the, you know, tips and tricks and things that we can do to make sure? And I mean, I find myself in a similar position. So what are some of the things that we can do to make sure that we're staying on top of the challenges of managing a couple of different things, and one of them being a stocker operation, and then we'll move on to other enterprises that we might do on a part-time basis. But for now, we'll start with this one.
Yeah. So I think this is a great question. And I think the question that was asked, honestly, is really applicable, because if you look across the United States, I would say most people who are running cow-calf, and we'll talk about that a little more later, are actually what I would call a side hustle, meaning the cow-calf enterprise is probably not paying someone full-time. And I think the same thing with many stocker operations. And I think we need to recognize that those can be profitable. I think one of the things you need to ask if you're thinking about this or you're engaged in it is, what do I want this side hustle or this enterprise to do for me? How much profit do I want it to make? And what does that look like? And so one of the challenges, I think, with any type of side hustle is, what are the overheads involved in terms of cost? And overhead costs are a big deal. These are things like pickups, trailers, four-wheelers, labor, equipment, tools. Those are things that they don't change very much based on the number of heads you're running. And so I think if you're thinking about a stocker or a yearling operation, you know, an example in my mind of a guy who started a stocker yearling operation and it grew as a guy named Gordon Hazard. If you haven't had the chance to read his book, you can still get it. He's since passed away, but just a really practical, applied guy, but was trained as a veterinarian, started a stocker operation as a side hustle to his vet business and grew that over time. And so I think it can be a profitable thing. I think you want to think about, what's my resource base? How much time do I want to commit? When do I have time? Do I have time every day, or do I have chunks of time at, you know, certain times of the year? Sometimes things like stocker cattle, you know, if you're getting in calves that need to be seen daily, especially when you're getting them straightened out and ready to go, that may not work as well for some folks, where maybe they have chunks of time during the year where they're more available. So I think your own personal lifestyle, when you have time, how your other full-time job complements that. Those are important things. You know, I think knowing what your costs are and being real with those. And then I think what is, again, as I said earlier, what do you want this to do for you? I think, you know, ranching for profit, I think Pratt said at one point, make sure you're not trying to build a sustainable business on unsustainable effort. And so sometimes when we're starting a side hustle or something, we're really giving it a lot of time and effort. And then I think that's fine, but long-term, is what you're doing sustainable? Or is it, you know, what's the time frame for that? What do you want to see happen with that? So those are some things I would ask. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, you mentioned overhead costs. And I think if I've got this right, we kind of break down costs in a ranch business into two categories, variable and overhead. And within overhead, you've got land cost and then kind of labor and equipment costs. Is that kind of a good rough sketch of how we understand those things?
Yep. Overhead costs. Yep. That would be a pretty good example is, you know, overhead costs don't change very much based on the number of cattle you're running. So, you know, if I've got 10 cows, I probably have a pickup. I might, I'm not saying you need to have a trailer, but some people would. I've got a four wheeler and some people might even have a tractor. Well, your overhead costs per cow unit are just too much to really have this, that kind of side hustle be very profitable. Now, that having been said, you don't necessarily have to have those things. I mean, Gordon Hazard is made pretty famous by saying he had a Dodge Dakota pickup and I think two pairs of fencing pliers. And the only reason he had two pairs in case he lost one, he made sure he had one. You know, I guess it just so he was really focused on being low overhead and he hired out a lot of the cattle hauling. He actually didn't own a trailer. And some people might say, you mean Gordon Hazard ran 1,800 head of yearlings and didn't own a trailer? Yeah, that's right, because he hired it done. And so that's what I think you have to think about with a side hustle is how can I hire some other people to maybe do some things or rent equipment or trade equipment where I don't have to own it? Because if you look at the few number of hours you use that or the few number of trips you use that piece of equipment per year, you just can't make it work financially. But if you can do some trading or bartering or hire someone else to do some things, then that still may be very well worth your time and effort in terms of providing some income.
Yeah. I finally had a chance to hear the quote in the wild. I'd heard that it was something that got said quite a bit, but and I think it originated with a New Zealand tribe kind of that said, you know, if you want to be profitable in ranching, sell the tractor and rent a wheelbarrow. And that's only if you're crazy about equipment. So,
right. Yeah. So, yeah, I was just going to say, as you think about a side hustle with the cattle business, I think you have to be really aggressive about making sure overheads don't get away from you because that's one that I just see almost always is going to be a major issue with a side hustle cattle business.
Yep. Oh, and it's so tempting. You know, I mean, you mentioned Gordon Hazard running 1,800 yearlings or stockers. You know, I think a lot of people think that the fun part of running stockers is getting to doctor cattle in the pasture. If you're running a 1,800 stockers with a Dodge Dakota pickup and two pairs of fencing pliers, notably absent from that, aside from a trailer, is a horse and all those other things, you know, that you might consider as part of it. So that's, you know, something that we would might maybe romanticize or something, but something to also keep in mind and think about, like that horse stands around, eats a lot of hay probably, you know, and only gets used a few times a year. Maybe it's not all, you know, or maybe you don't need the whole cavy anyways.
Right.
But
yeah. No, I think also, as you think about a side hustle, what are things you enjoy doing? How can you leverage your skills? You know, or what's something you want to grow in and get better at? You know, that I think is a good opportunity as well. I think how can you use your skill set to serve others with a side hustle? You know, sometimes a side hustle might be, and I know a local guy here, he has a job on the railroad and he custom grazes cows on rented corn stalks in the wintertime. And he's able to make that work between his railroad job. And so there's a lot of different ways to do things. You may not own the cattle. You may not own the land. You know, Greg Judy's become pretty well known and he started his operation as a side hustle in custom grazing on leased land. So there's a lot of different ways to think about this, but you know, again, I think know your cost. What do you want it to do for you? What is the outcome you want? And be real about those things. Visit some with some other people who are doing it and doing it well. What can you learn from them?
What are some of the examples of other things you could want it to do for you? I mean, you know, are you talking build equity, generate cash flow, those kinds of things?
Yeah. So I think, you know, most time we hear side hustles, people want some additional income. They want some additional net income to them. And I think that can sure work. You know, some people want to have some experiences for the family members. You know, they just enjoy having an opportunity to go have some chores for their kids to do, or, you know, it might be some landscape management issues. You know, a herd of goats on a brushy piece of ground in Missouri might be a side hustle to deal with something like that. You know, there's some places where a side hustle is, you know, they'll let you have the ground if you will keep it open so they can hunt deer. And so maybe you're running some cattle as a service actually to manage a piece of property. So there's a lot of different situations to think about that could be, you know, an opportunity that's a part-time enterprise.
You know, as I think about my own personal side hustle, I've been kind of blown away or I've marveled at how much more complex a cow-calf operation is than a custom grazing operation, and more from the perspective of just those, all those months that you have cows there. When you have a cow-calf operation, you have them year-round, they're there, you know, a lot longer, and you've got to make sure that your feed budgeting, you know, takes into account that they're going to be here year-round, and you need to have something there for them. So I think that's another consideration, is just what's realistic for your time demands. But, you know, a lot of people around here are looking for grass in the summer, and so that becomes another perspective to look at too, is family vacations and those things. If you want to get those done in the summer, then, you know, custom grazing can be kind of hard on that schedule.
Yeah. I think again, what's your time availability? When do you have time available? Do you have, you know, a couple hours every day, or do you have, you know, chunks of time at certain times of the year where you are more available to do some of those things?
Yeah. Would you say anything else with regard to this question specifically, as far as the stockers and, you know, growing the business, you know, those kinds of things? Would you have anything else to say regarding this question specifically?
Well, I think the stocker business is one that there's a lot of different ways you can approach this. So are you actually going and buying the calves? Do you like to go to the sale? Are you finding the deals? Do you have an order buyer? Are you, you know, buying them privately? What's the outcome of those calves when you're done? Are you taking them back to the auction barn? Or, you know, there's just a lot of different ways you can think about this. You know, some guys really like going to a sale barn, and they're good at buying and straightening out calves. And for them, that's a nice side hustle because they have a competitive advantage. They like working with calves. They are good at that. And so they can take someone else's mismanagement and put together some groups of calves that, and add value to them. And so, you know, sometimes a side hustle is not just some resources, but your skill set. And what can you do with your set of skills that is maybe unique or you're good at that you like to do? So, you know, I think that's, you know, something else to be aware of. Just how does that fit as you think about considering an enterprise like this?
And regional advantages too. You know, I've said this a couple of times in recent episodes that I went to the Wally Olson Marketing School, and he said, you know, this kind of marketing doesn't really work as well north and west of here, because as you go farther north and west, the management just gets better and better. And then I talked to another guy from the Gulf Coast of Texas, and he said the same thing. He said, I could go buy a trailer, like a horse trailer full, maybe even a potload of uncut bull calves every sale day here at the sale barn. You know, it just, they come, that's the way they come, you know? And so it, you talk about some of those calves you can straighten out. He called them fixer upper cattle, you know, that you can get a hold of and add value to them just, you know, by, you know, running them through the chute basically. And you've already added some value to them, get them healthy, get them weaned, and you've added a lot of value to them. So some of those regional advantages are something to think about too. And I think one of the things that I appreciate that you've said a couple of times so far in this episode is, what are you good at? Or also, what do you want to get better at? You know, if you want to improve stockmanship, bring in a bunch of yearlings and they'll show you the holes in your stockmanship pretty quick. So I think those are some things, some good considerations.
Yeah. No, I think also, as you think about a side hustle, is how is it going to impact not only you, but your family? You know, you mentioned this earlier, but I think all the people involved, how do they feel about it? What do they enjoy? Is that going to, you know, what's that going to do for all the people involved who are going to be impacted by that decision?
Yeah. And how much do you think scale matters? I mean, I think scale is a huge thing, like for, like we've talked about with overheads, especially where you can spread those overheads out over more head of cattle. But you know, how much do you think scale matters, or do you think that maybe a really outside the box operation, like, and maybe this isn't really outside the box, but an outside the box operation like goats or sheep or something might be a better fit for some people who just don't have the ability to do the cow numbers at scale that they might need to justify the time?
Yeah. So I think sometimes, honestly, Clay, our overheads are things, sometimes things we think we have to have, but there often are ways to get around doing that, that we maybe don't have to own them. Mm-hmm. And I'll just give a quick example. When my wife and I first started with an extension, we had the opportunity to lease a ranch, and we owned a $2,500 pickup, and that was the only piece of equipment we owned for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Now we borrowed a tractor, and I had to lease a trailer or borrow a trailer, but that was the only piece of equipment we had. So what I'm saying is, a $2,500 pickup and 150 cows, that overhead per cow unit wasn't that expensive. Mm-hmm. Right. But we happened to be in a place where there was already a working facility. There was a tractor that the landowner let me use as part of leasing the place. And so our overhead costs weren't very much in that kind of scenario. So I guess what I'm saying with that is, you just have to be creative and think about where you're at and what you can do as you think about overheads.
In your experience, is it often the case that there are other lease opportunities available if you're willing to maybe let go of the one you have and look for something else? Because maybe sometimes we're just not in a very workable situation with the lease that we have currently.
Yeah, I think that can be. You know, I think as you think about a side hustle also, though, you have to be careful, how far am I willing to travel to get to a lease? Because, you know, if you're driving by the pasture on your way home from work, it really wasn't out of your way, and it didn't cost you any really extra gas and wear and tear. If you're having to drive 20 miles out of your way to go visit a small leased pasture where you've got 15 head of cattle, your time and your gas and wear and tear add up pretty quickly. So, you know, sometimes you have to lease something to get your foot in the door or have an opportunity. But then, as hopefully things come back, or as you get some credibility, you know, you can find something that fits you a little better. So there's some logistics that go with a side hustle also, that I think you have to take into account.
Yeah. Talk about that credibility piece a little bit. What are some of the things you're thinking, have in mind there?
Yeah. So I think from a side hustle perspective, you know, if you're trying to get started, you know, if you have the opportunity to lease a small piece of ground and you fix the fence, you keep it up, it looks nice. There's parts of the country where people notice that. And, you know, out here where we are, Clay, not so much, but you go further east of the Missouri, Mississippi, where there's, you know, small pieces of ground, a lot of times there's an absentee landowner or an older landowner who wants a piece of property to have a certain appearance, and someone taking care of that land with livestock is what is needed for that to occur. And so that, you know, that can give you some opportunities to have some cattle on the side, not own the land, but still provide a service to somebody else and hopefully make a profit for yourself with the time and effort you have.
Yeah. So what about other, or I guess if we don't have anything else specifically, or we've touched on a lot of things, not necessarily specifically related to stalkers, but what about other enterprises, if it's safe to move on and we can come back to stalkers too, but what about other Sure. enterprises as far as different, you know, cow-calf or those as far as they relate to a side hustle, any special considerations there?
Yeah, you know, I think from a cow-calf perspective, in my mind, and this is a little hard for some people, but when you look at most cow-calf producers in the United States, I would say it's a side hustle. And what I mean by that is it's not their primary source of income. In fact, in many cases, and I think as your listener alluded to, they're probably putting money into the cow-calf deal. They're not getting much out. And so, you know, just to give some perspective here, I just looked today at the last USDA data looking at number of cow herds in the United States and size of cow herds. There are 700,000 cow-calf producers who have less than 200 cows. I'll just say that again. There are 700,000 cow-calf producers that have less than 200 cows. Mm. And I'm not saying you can't make a living with less than 200 cows. There may be some unique situations you can, but for most commercial producers, that's not going to provide a family living. There's only 30,000 producers who have 200 cows or more. Mm. So by far, most cow-calf operations are a side deal. They're not a primary income source. Now they might complement some other enterprises, and that could be a real situation. But for most people, the cow-calf deal is a side hustle. So here's some things in my mind. If you're looking at having, you know, a fewer number of cows, overhead things still apply. But how do you keep it simple? That whole KISS principle. How do you keep it simple? So, you know, things like probably don't raise your own replacement efforts. Look for ways to lease bulls, share bulls, hire, you know, where possible, equipment to do hauling, things like that. Because again, when you look at cost of overheads, it's just really hard for a small cow-calf operation to pay for a tractor and a pickup and a four-wheeler and a trailer and all those overheads. So, yeah. Or if you do have them, you need to try to make sure they're a minimum or, you know, a least cost type situation.
As far as not expensive per item, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah. Yeah. Not expensive per item. And some people have great skills. They can fix anything. And right. So, yeah. You know, they've got a $1,500 tractor and they spend $1,000 a year, maybe fixing it, but it doesn't, you know, they can do it themselves. You know, the great thing about cow-calf as a side hustle is once you get a cow mature, you know, especially in parts of the world where they've got live water and things like that, she kind of takes care of herself. And that's, you know, doesn't require a lot of input. And that when you need to do things with the cow can often be scheduled. It doesn't have to be a certain day. It doesn't have to be every day. And so that's one of the real advantages of cow-calf that I think also people like, is there's not a lot of trading. There's not a lot of moving. You know, you might take calves to town a couple times a year. It doesn't require a lot of scheduled work time. And so I think Allen Nation said cow-calf is a great part-time enterprise for a lot of people. And I think that's reflected in that USDA data. That's why we see 700,000 operations that have less than 200 cows.
Hmm. Yeah. What do you think is are there unique challenges to different enterprises? You know, each enterprise, I think, you know, I mentioned one earlier, the cow-calf, they're there all year round, you know, or you're responsible for making sure that there's something there for them to eat all year round. And whereas stalkers and custom grazing, it's for a definite period of time, you know, whether it's 90 days or 6 months or whatever. So,
yeah, I think, you know, having the cattle there year round is a challenge, again, depending on the location and where you're at. And I'm not picking on folks in the Southeast here, but if you've got live water or you've got ponds and you've got a decent fence, those cows don't care whether you come and see them once a week or not. I mean, you know, just to be honest, they, unless you're doing something with them, you know, they don't, they're not worried about that. Now, if you're in your part of the world, Clay, where you've got windmills or, you know, a submersible well, you know, that's a little different deal. But even now with technology, you know, you got access to cell phones and a game camera, you can set that up and have it send a picture to your phone once a day that takes a picture of the water tank that tells you if the cattle have water or not. So, you know, there's some things there that are ways to set it up to reduce the, I have to be there every day type situation.
Yep. And I suppose scale and the advantages of scale are pretty much always related to overcoming the overheads issue. But are there other things other than overhead that make scale an attractive piece?
You know, from an input perspective, scale helps you out sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're buying one bag of salt mineral versus buying a ton, you know, there's some advantage there. If you're buying a truckload of a commodity versus a bag of commodity, you know, there's some advantages there. You know, also real advantages on the marketing side. You know, if you can put together a load lot of uniform cattle, it's just going to help you out a bunch. If you're selling small groups, you're just going to see a discount and compared to a load lot of the same cattle of the same kind. So, you know, that's just reality. Now, that having been said, that doesn't mean that it can't be profitable. You know, if your inputs are low enough or you're adding value to a property, you know, that still works fine. And same thing with the stocker deal. Again, if you're taking some other mismanaged cattle and you're able to straighten them up, clean them up, put together some uniform groups, you can add some value. And so I want to make sure that I'm not saying that can't work. It's just, you have to be careful in examining the enterprise and the costs involved.
Sure. So, you know, a while back I talked to Hugh Aljo from the Noble Institute in Oklahoma, and he said that one of the things that they try to do is challenge people's paradigms to think about how many animals you have to have a load lot. And what makes sense in my mind is like 120 cows, if you take those heifers and steers all the way to 900 pounds, then you've got a load lot again. You know, you end up owning them a lot longer, and there's probably more risk there. But I think that there are other ways to maybe deal with that scale issue too. You don't have to have 200 cows to sell 500-600 pound calves in load lots by, you know, in the fall or in, you know, in the early winter or whatever.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's around marketing, you know, finding people who may want what you have and asking, how could I deliver something that you want, but maybe it's not a load lot. So, you know, they say, hey, we're getting calves in this time of year. If they come with this vaccination schedule, we'll buy them from you. Mm. Or, you know, that's, and so you don't have a load lot, but you are providing something someone else wants, and you've provided a management practice that's important to them. And if, you know, if you have some trust there, they're willing to compensate you. And so that's another opportunity, I think, as well, if you're, you know, looking at a side hustle type scenario, is how can I think about marketing these animals a little differently? You know, when you get to the sheep and goat deal, I don't think we see the advantage for load lots with those, because oftentimes you're selling lambs anywhere from a 50 to 120 pound lamb could be going directly to be harvested. So that's not the same kind of scenario. So, you know, sheep and goats for some people might be a good side hustle, just because I don't think some of the impacts of economies of scale are there. And then, you know, you can do some things with sheep and goats with equipment that you can't do with cattle. Mm-hmm. Or you don't have to have the equipment. So
right.
That's, you know, I think another situation that, and also they're less expensive to get started with.
And this year, highly profitable.
Well, for some people, yes.
Not every. But I think that, you know, near where I live anyways, the way they sell sheep and goats, they'll often sell pools of sheep. So it doesn't, you can bring in 10 one day and five of them fit in this one pool, and they put 300 of them in that pool, you know, and right. There might be 6 or 8 or 10 or 20 names of different operations that brought those lambs to put together. And, you know, that's just the way the sheep deal works, at least where I'm at. So I think that, yeah. that makes a difference.
Yeah.
Do you have any personal experience? I mean, you mentioned your $2,500 pickup. Do you have any other personal experiences as far as managing time? I think that's a big one, managing time when it comes to a side hustle and making sure that you're not just ending up with another 40-hour-a-week job on top of the one you already had.
Yeah, you know, I Burke Tigard, I think, challenged me on this. I think keep it simple. You know, if you've got a cow-calf operation, you know, and again, I'll probably make some people uncomfortable, but you know, if you're running less than 250, 300 cows, should you be developing your own replacement heifers? You know, should you just be buying bred cows for somebody else? Keep it simple. You know, if you have a side hustle, maybe you shouldn't be calving heifers. Maybe you want to buy mature cows, and you know, again, keep it simple. Try to only have one or two groups, or you know, if you could just have one. You know, share bulls. And again, when I say that, some people say, oh, share bulls, that's a health risk, just a huge deal. And again, you have to be very careful. You got to work with people you trust. You know, you have to have some parameters there, but try to keep it as simple as you can. You know, try to limit the number of groups you have, where you have to go, what you have to do with them to make it work, or have it be something that, you know, really fits your schedule where, you know, maybe it's half hour in the morning, half hour in the evening, but make sure that you can do that. Or, you know, you can have someone else help you occasionally too. So
is it worth it to keep track of hours spent on something like that and try and make sure that you're, you know, it's worth your actual time investment?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think for a lot of people though, the side hustle, if we're thinking about cattle, they enjoy it. It's almost therapeutic. And I get that. I mean, if you've been inside all day staring at a computer, for me, it's a lot of fun to go out and be with some cattle, move some cattle, you know, look at the grass, look at the, just be outside. So, you know, I think that's just reality too. But I think also being real with yourself, you know, what's the time I invest? What's the equipment I invest? You know, what's it take and what am I getting back?
Yep. So for me, like my day job pastoring is people and thinking. And so, aside from the actual planning of the grazing, going out there, rolling up wire, and stepping in posts doesn't require a lot of mental engagement. And so for me, it is good. I enjoy the moving of the wire. I enjoy a lot of those quote unquote mindless tasks because it just gives me time to either listen to a podcast that's not related to ranching or, pastoral work, or gives me a chance to just, you know, do something in silence for a while or whatever. It's kind of a way for me to get out and do something that's just not related necessarily to what I do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Mental, you know, health.
Yeah, that's right. So we talk about side hustle. And I think the question that this listener asked is how do we try to make it be profitable? And that's important. But for many people, the side enterprise is providing a benefit that may not be financial. It keeps them mentally, physically, you know, healthy to be able to continue to go to that day job that maybe they have a hard time seeing much accomplished, but hey, I can see, you know, I moved some cattle today, or I fixed some fence, or, you know, there's just some satisfaction that comes from a side hustle sometimes that is beyond financial.
Yeah. I dropped, let's talk body weight percentages, from Christmas to the end of grazing season, last year. Let me see if I could do the math. It was a good amount of percentage of body weight. I think maybe like 12% of my body weight from post holidays to the end of the grazing season last year. So there's some other benefits too.
Yeah, there can be.
I wasn't a bastion of self-control during that holiday season. Let's just say that. Aaron, I appreciate your time today. Any other thoughts on this, or any other things you were hoping to include in this discussion?
I think I just want to affirm that I think cattle can be a great part-time, livestock, sheep, goats can be a great part-time enterprise. And for many people, where they're at, to be honest, it may be their only option. And I don't want to, sometimes we talk about scale, we talk about, you know, wanting to be profitable, and it's important. And I think you still can be profitable with having a side hustle like this. I think you got to be creative. I think you want to think outside the box, recognize that you might not look like your neighbor with this, and you may not have all the tools and the pieces of equipment that they have, but it still can be both a profitable and an enjoyable thing. And so think about it, look at opportunities, visit with some other people, see how it might fit you, and go for it.
Yeah. Very good. I appreciate your time today. Show notes page for today, workingcows.net/210, workingcows.net/210. I looked up the Gordon Hazard book while we were talking today just to check and see. And currently right now, you can buy yourself a copy for the low, low price of $1,700 on Amazon. So I don't know if there's other, if you've got a honey hole of copies of that somewhere that you know about to get it, but it's been out of print since I started the Working Cows podcast. And the one of the websites I found says occasionally comes available on Amazon, but right now it's available for $1,700.
I guess I better guard my copy. I didn't realize it was worth that much.
That's the beauty of the internet, right? It's listed for that much. It's only worth what somebody will pay you for it. But
well, if you have a listener that wants to pay me $1,700 for my copy, just have them get in contact with me.
Is yours signed?
It's not, well, I'll sign it for him. It's not got Gordon's name in it. But,
oh, perfect. All right. Well, I'll have links to that and the Beef Watch podcast and the Beef Watch newsletter up at workingcows.net/210. Aaron, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thanks again, Clay. I appreciate it.
Very good stuff with Aaron, as always. Really appreciate his thoroughness and his pastoral answers, I guess, is maybe a way to say it. Just really appreciate Aaron and his friendship over the years. Really looking forward to next week. We're going to talk to Wyatt Donald. Wyatt is a rancher in South Central Montana, and they're doing some neat things on leased land and finding good people to operate leases for them and different things like that. So really looking forward to talking to Wyatt next week on the Working Cows podcast. We'll see you with another episode real soon.